Good evening.
Good evening.
Many of you have this compendium of Hokkyo Tamai study. I don't know how many of you don't. How many of you do? Easier to count the don'ts, but that's pretty good. So that
are you
means.
Talking about this?
No.
Oh, yeah, no.
So it makes it easier for me to kind of move around.
That's good. I have a few copies if you can get that.
Sure.
Are included in here, so but this is a big study, and what Charlie Pokorny put it together, and you can see in the beginning, first couple of pages, how many commentators there are. So we can't possibly study all this, and we shouldn't be expected to, but part of this book includes commentaries on Tozan's five positions, and part of this book includes Sozan's commentaries on Sozan's five positions. Dungshan and Caoshan. Caoshan was Dungshan's student. In the lineage, we say Ungo Doyo. Ungo was also Tozan's student. But Ungo was not interested in the five ranks for one reason or another. Caoshan, Sozan, was. And so Caoshan more or less continued and developed Tozan's teaching of the five ranks. So that complicates the commentaries in here, because sometimes you think you're reading about Tozan, you're actually reading about Sozan. And the way that the book was put together was just as a companion and not really perfected for publication. So you have to kind of understand how everything is really delineated so that you can find what you want, but you really have to look hard to find out how to do that. So he says things like C1 or C13, right, as reference. And well, where is that? Where is that? Well, anyway, we can look at that. And I'll show you how to do that. So the first part of this book. Really well put together. Almost the first half is devoted to word by word meaning of the Hokkyo Tamai. It actually is character by character, word by word. And if you just open it anywhere, like page 6, for instance, 16, over to page 60.
16.
Any page, it doesn't matter. 16 is 1-6. Yours probably aren't marked, are they?
Yeah.
Basically. So you see the top line are the characters, right?
Yeah.
And then there are little numbers there that are referenced. And then, like the first character is Yah, Y-E, yeah. Which means night, dark, night. Yeah, so, and then the second character is Man, which means half or middle. Third character is Zen, which means upright, true, right, true, and so forth. So each character of the Hokyo Zamai is the meaning, more or less, of each character is right there under the character. And then there are various under that are the various ways that each person, each commentator, has expressed what he thinks is the meaning of the sentence. Right? So, and so JT, JR, CT, those are the initials of the commentators. So we go down to to JR, this is CT. It is bright just as midnight. It doesn't appear at dawn. And CF, in the middle of the night, is just when it's bright. At dawn, it doesn't appear. So, and then down to the right of that are some notes by various people. And then below that are comments. So, if you see, look down here, it says NW, right? That's me. So I have a lot of comments in this.
So is that you?
Huh?
W.
I beg your pardon?
Is that Mel
Weissman? Yeah, MW, my initial. Mm-hmm. Dark is oneness, no boundaries, purity and light is phenomena, various existences, and so forth. So I'm one of the commentators here, and I have a lot of comments. Two on the next page. I'm not trying to bring my attention to that, but there it is. So then when we get done with the meaning of each character, which is like on page something here. Page 63 or 64, depending on where your numbers put. And then there are bibliographies, and then various commentaries, and various long commentaries. Now I asked you to look at page 77. The reason I did that is to bring us back to the beginning, more or less, of where we started. And I want to go over the circles again and talk about this the circle. Now, as I explained before, the Dogon, you know, being Chinese and being familiar with the five classics of in China, of which the I Ching is one. The five classics in China are the, you know, the main literature of China, and the I Ching seems to be one of those very ancient books of wisdom. So, being very familiar with that, Tozan used those symbols, you know, to express his understanding in conjunction with the five ranks. But we're not, and for us to do that, I think would take more study. to, you know, really get the feelings with us. But we could do that. We could just kind of, at some point, we'll see. Maybe that would be a good idea, too. Because there is an explanation in the commentaries, and we could look at that, but not today. So, next to the I Ching on the left column are the five circles. And as I said once before, circular forms were very commonly in use in those days to for teachers to express to their students their understanding. Apparently, Chinese kind of distrusted words. they kind of thought more in symbolic ways and poetic ways. So Chinese seems to be very, the expression is very poetic. So that's why, one reason why it's hard to translate, for one thing, and especially Tang Dynasty Chinese, which is like us translating Chaucer, or something even more obscure, maybe, because it's thin. we have to use a lot of, it's a kind of intuition and reason, a mixture of intuition and reason. And I think that's the way the Chinese think. Because you can translate Chinese in so many different ways because the directives are not there. The directives meaning the connecting words. The direction to understand it. So it really takes knowledge, of, not just knowledge of the language, but knowledge of the nuance. If you, I know some of you may know Chinese, I don't, but I know that. Raising the voice means something, and raising the voice again means something, and lowering the voice means something. So when you say something, you know, we say, oh, Chinese is very sing-song. Well, that's right, they sing and it's a song. That's absolutely right. So they sing, and they sing a song instead of just, you know, talking. And the inflection means everything. I had the trouble listening to some like foreign language, often foreign to me, because the inflections are different even though all the words are right. And the way we construct our sentence forms we're familiar with, but when you run a bunch of words together without commas and inflections in English, it's hard to understand what somebody's saying, for me. So I depend a lot on inflection for understanding language. Using symbols was very common in China, and it's something concrete that you could, you know, look at and deal with. So Guishan and Yangshan were, Yangshan was Guishan's student, and Guishan used anywhere from almost 100 circles, different circles, to illustrate the practice in various ways, the practice in the Dharma in various ways. I have some of those circles, which many years ago, when I was a young novice, there was a Korean teacher, Dr. Seo, and he and I used to talk a lot, and he published a book, which is not available, but he presented quite a number of those circles of Guishan, and sometime it would be interesting to look at those. I might pass those out at some point. And then, of course, there are the 10 oxide pictures, which are the most popular, you know. This is kind of in keeping with the spirit of the times, with the five positions. which illustrate Dongshan's or Gozan's teaching. So I don't want to go into Sozan's teachings, because that just, maybe later, if we're still interested in this, we can go into Sozan's teaching. It's much more complex and more, I think maybe it wasn't Tozan's teaching so much that was the problem, but Sozan's teaching became very speculative and intellectualized, and that's the kind of problem here. But that's why I want to kind of keep it simple and express Tozan's understanding, but our own understanding of Tozan's understanding, and stay with that without getting too complicated. And I think Suzuki Roshi would approve of that. Dogen, in many places, kind of dismissed the five ranks. Study. But, as we talked about last time, in his Genjo Koan, the heart of the Genjo Koan is based on the five ranks. So actually, Dogen talks a lot about the various things that appear in the five ranks. But he does it in his own way. So, last time I presented Maizumi Roshi's commentary on the five ranks of practice. If you remember, maybe not. But there are two, Tozan and Sozan, presented two parallel, seemingly parallel, teachings of the five ranks. I don't like to call them ranks. Ranks is Dumulin, I think, was the one who coined the term ranks. But they're really five positions. So I'm going to try to say positions, but I always fall into saying five ranks because it's like, my language. So if we look at the diagram at the top of the page, we have the Yi Qing on the left, and then we have the circles, the black and white circles, and then on the right of that circles is the commentary, not the commentary but the kind of explanation, right? And then on the right of that we have these shift, submission, achievement, collective achievement, and absolute achievement. Now, the explanation right next to the circles, I would call the understanding, the study of understanding. The study of understanding the absolute and the relative. That's what the circles are about. And next to those is called shift, submission, achievement, collective achievement, absolute achievement. You see that? That's called practice. So one is called understanding, the other is called practice. The five ranks of understanding, and the five positions of understanding, and the five positions of practice. Now, and next to those is another list called host and guest. Yeah. Host coming to light, guest coming to host, host in the host, right? I think that's Sozan, the way Sozan, his nomenclature. And then, on the right of that, prince, minister, prince looking at minister, minister returning to prince, and prince and minister in harmony. So, it's pretty much the same thing, but using different nomenclature. So this is like the 9th century, where they had princes, had princes and ministers and knights and forks, I mean, swords. So then, so they're using the nomenclature of the stuff around them. So host and guest is the same as prince and minister. And using, you know, the symbolic figures of authority and submission, actually. So, of course, the prince, if you go on the far right, the prince stands for the absolute, and the minister stands for the ordinary. And the prince looking at the minister, and the minister returning to the prince, and the prince and minister in harmony. So these are various aspects of the way we look at form and emptiness, or absolute and relative, or just various names for these positions. Okay, so the reason I chose this page was so that we could get on the same page, no pun intended. So last time we talked about the practice side, which is what the way Dogen talks about the practice side. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. Right? That's called the shift. The shift from the way that we, our ordinary life, to a life of practice. Let me find it here for you. Oh yeah. If you turn the page, you have this chart. See the chart?
Yeah.
Well, I'll explain the chart. It says Dogen's five positions of the apparent and the real. Verses on positions one by one. And this is also see Hakuin and Verdu's section below. Verdu was a scholar who published a lot of. He was the first scholar that I know of to publish anything on the five ranks. And he has his own. And Hakuin is my favorite commentator on the five ranks.
Right.
How many of you remember studying Hakuin's commentary when we did this before?
I remember you talking about it.
Right.
But I don't remember it.
Okay. Well, that would be the thing for us, very much like us to study. Okay. So if you look at the left-hand column going down, it says Dongshan's titles of the five positions. Okay, so we'll just go across and look at that. The apparent within the real within the apparent, the coming from within the real, arriving in both, and the attainment in both, which is called unity attained. Okay, so the first, the first rank, the first position is a circle. If you go back, you see the first position is called the real containing the seeming. Right? Well, the real is our absolutely our true nature, and the seeming is what seems to be real. The Hokkien Zamai is to some extent based on the Sandokai. The Sandokai talks about the real, it talks about the dark and the light. So Goshan is using the symbols which are in the Hokkien Sandokai in the makeup of these symbols. It's dark and light. So dark, as we know, is called the absolute, or where there is no form or shape. And the light is where everything is illuminated, and all of the forms and shapes stand out individually. So when you turn off the lights, everything disappears. So that's what we call all one. And when you turn on the lights, you have differentiation. All many. Right? So this is the dark, and this is the light. So, but light and dark are the same thing, even though they're different. Same and different. All in one, and one in all. So, the first position, the real containing the seeming. In other words, really in that circle, the dark should be mostly covering with a little bit of light, because the light is concealed within the dark. The differentiation, in other words, darkness or oneness is most prominent. When you sit in Zazen, that's the dark with a little bit of light, even though it's totally light. But symbolically, there's very little differentiation. There's differentiation, but it's not much, because there's no discrimination. So differentiation means discrimination. In the dark, there's no discrimination. But in the light, everything is discriminated. In other words, divided. So I'm here, you're there, this post is there, right? That's individuation. But our fundamental nature is non-discriminated. So it's discrimination concealed within non-discrimination. That's the first position. That's why it's mostly dark. The second position, the seeming composing the real. So that's where light is dominant, and the real is in the background.
It's comprising, not composing.
Comprising, yeah. I don't like those words either. I like hidden. So I like it like hidden and concealed. So the light is concealed within the dark. And here the dark is concealed within the light. Right. And then the third, the resurgence of the real. Resurgence, I don't know if that's a good word either, but you see that little black dot is the real, the absolute, but Buddha nature, or Dharmakaya. And it's surrounded by light. So it's right in the center. And up, so you can say the first one, the first position is form is emptiness. And the second position, you can say emptiness is form. So those are the two fundamental the two fundamental aspects of our nature. And the third one, but they're not active. They're simply fundamentals. So the third, the resurgence of the real within of the dark within the light, that's activation. That the synthesis of those two aspects, and the actualization in activity. So then, the fourth circle is the see-me mixing, uniting with the real. This is the position. Everybody has a different idea about it. My understanding is it's the position where you're totally acting at. You're totally acting through practice, and you're really making a big effort to express your practice in the world. But it's really the understanding of total immersion in practice. So there's no backsliding, no. You know why. It's like why a bodhisattva is born to do something, and there's no way. There's nothing else to do. That's all there is to do, is to have bodhisattva practice. And the fifth one, which is integration of the real and the seeming, that's the fifth one, is the fifth circle is not even think, this is beyond bodhisattva, beyond Zen, beyond practice. It's such complete integration that you don't even think about what you're doing in that sense. But whatever you do, it's called the perfection of practice perfected. So that perfected is not the right word, but complete. So that there's you're not even thinking about practice. It's just that whatever you do is practice without even thinking about it, because you can't do anything wrong. This is, I think, what Suzuki Roshi's attitude was, because he didn't try to teach us precepts, he didn't try to teach us much about Buddhism. He said, you should, just let your practice be your, just trust your practice to direct you to do the right thing. It only works for someone who is at that level. the rest of us have to study precepts and do all those things. Yeah.
It sounds like it's you're saying it's rather than understanding or our study, or it's talking about action. It's talking about what you do rather than what's happening internally. You know what I'm saying?
Well, internally, there's no... Yeah. At this point, there's no external or internal.
Right. Right, no, I understand that. But prior to that, these other points are about action.
Development.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're not talking about internal development. Mm-hmm. You're talking about your way of acting in the world, mm-hmm. or you. Your immersion in practice, for example, which is an action mm-hmm. rather than a internal achievement. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think I know what you're saying. It's well, I think it's right. I think it's being how you be. And then you act out of how you be. So the main thing is being. As Dogen says, being time. Time is being, and being is time. What makes time is existence. And what makes existence time, time is existence, and what makes existence is time. So, Suzuki Roshi gave some talk on this, and he always brought it back to now. There's nothing but now. There's nothing but this moment. So, it sounds simple, but what is this moment? And what is the next moment? There is no next moment. There's only this moment. There's no past moment. There's only this moment. So this is very, it sounds simple, but it's the most difficult thing to grasp, is this moment. Yeah.
With the fourth rank, the seeming uniting with the real, you said that was kind of the bodhisattva model. Does a bodhisattva
have... The first position is forms emptiness.
Yeah.
The second is emptiness is form.
Right.
The third is resurgence of the real within form. In other words, being informed you understand that there is no you. There's only... Because form and emptiness are synthesized, and you can't separate them in your mind, and your understanding is that there is no separation, even though form is form and emptiness is emptiness. In other words, even though they're one, they're independent. Another form is form and emptiness is emptiness. Otherwise, it's still dualistic. Because when we're here, we're not thinking about emptiness, we're only thinking about form. But when you're doing zazen, you're not thinking about form, except sitting up straight.
But I thought you said in the fourth, right, it's expressing totally your practice in the world.
Yes.
Okay. Well, my question is, in expressing, I'm trying to differentiate it from the fifth. In expressing your practice totally in the world, is there still some sense of self that you're in the background that you're aware of? Small self.
Yes.
So, and then the fifth, then that sense is
right. That's gone. Right.
Okay. Yeah. That's what.
More or less right. More or less right. I mean, tentatively we'll say that's right. We're going to stop in a minute for a stretch, but do you both?
I had a question. Now, my understanding is Charlie composed this chart, or was that actually taken directly from somebody's, the way he's got the columns?
I don't know. I can't say.
Okay. Because what I'm also kind of hearing is the lines of the Hokkien Zanmai, like the heron in the moonlight, and all those metaphors or the poetic images, I'm wondering if you might tie those in as well. The lines of the poem itself.
Oh yeah, well we'll get, yeah. So for each one of these positions, circles, Telzin had a poem to describe each one. And we'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So so we just have to keep getting familiar and familiar and familiar with all this, so that when we talk about it, we don't have to go back each time and explain it. Is it time to have a stretch? Okay, 5 minutes, no problem. You can sit, stand, pee, whatever. No, we can talk about that. Yeah. Although he does that, he takes us off in a different direction. Ron would like me to present Master Shin Yen's commentary on the five legs, which is quite different in some way. Talks about the routine a bit. Because it's so different, you know, I'd rather wait a little bit.
Okay.
He uses the terms vexation and wisdom.
Or not attachment and attachment.
Yeah, but those are okay. Wisdom would be the dark,
He reverses it.
And
wisdom is the light.
Yeah, so I'd rather kind of stay with our if you turn to page 111, middle of the page, it says translations and commentaries. See that? Do you have enough light to see? Okay. And then it says below, then there's a couple of Chiwei song verses. The Chiwei song are verses on the sequence of degrees of Dunsha. And then it has page numbers and stuff. And then it has page 121, 29. Dongshan's verses with Verdu's comments and some Yuan Xian excerpts. You see that?
Yeah.
And then below that it says one. And this is a translation of the verses to go with each one of the circles from Dongshan. And then Verdu's commentary. So there's one, two, three on this page. You see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to just read that so you get this idea of the verses and their meaning. Are there at least what Verdu believes their meaning is? So, number one, there is diversity in the midst of equality. Okay. Equality is used here to mean the absolute, or the dark, right? And diversity means the light side. Right now we're in diversity. Does anybody not get that? Okay. Unity and diversity. So there's diversity in the midst of equality, In the midst, and here's the poem, the verse. In the beginning, in the dead of night, at the small hours, and before the moon shines, do not be surprised that people, meaning, do not recognize each other, one another. And yet, they still harbor a faint memory of the fascination of the past day. So what do you think that means? Without reading the commentary. Well, let's get the picture, right? Like the quiet, it's like the quiet of the night, around midnight, right? Everything is settled, and it's dark. There's not much activity. Just this dark stillness. And you begin to reminisce about something that you knew a long time ago the vague memory of yesterday, you know, yesterday means a long time ago. So it's like, you know, there's something that you've missed, that you're missing when it's quiet like that. You know, when you're really active, you don't, because of the momentum of our life, we don't feel that something's missing necessarily. But when you're all alone, it's suddenly dark and still, and there's no movement, and you feel there's something that my movement has obscured, that's real deep. So, and it's like, it's real familiar. Real familiar, except that you don't feel that familiarity very often. Until you do zazen. So, in the beginning of the dead of night, at the small hours and before the moon shines, do not be surprised that people meeting do not recognize one another. So it's like you meet yourself, but you don't recognize yourself. You don't recognize it, even though it's there. So it's like it's always there, but you don't recognize it until something. So do not be surprised that people, that you, actually it's usually translated as you meet but do not recognize the other, and yet you still harbor a faint memory of the fascination of the past day. So like maybe before, when you're a child, you have it, but then because of our, when we start creating an ego or self, we lose it. So this is like recognizing that innocence that you had when you were a very small child. So this is, you get a feeling for your true self. Does that make sense? So Virgin says, the pitch dark period of the dead of night is a lucid symbol of undifferentiated consciousness. Before consciousness, of course, means discrimination. This stage corresponds to a standpoint of noetic emptiness, the highest state of samadhi. The enlightened mind has reached the peak of total cessation of sensorial and intellective functions. But the stage of purity is neither final nor exclusive. It contains the seeds of past experiences. In the subliminal levels of consciousness, when the moon starts shining, the process of discrimination will be ready to appear. Right, so when the moon starts shining, that means light's coming out. And then everything becomes, you start to see things. But before the moon appears, you don't see anything. Right? You're in the utter darkness of your true self, of undifferentiated awareness. And then the moon comes and everything becomes differentiated. You see the differences.
Well, I wonder about that. I mean, if this person
is deep into noetic emptiness, why should he be bothered by a little thing like moonlight?
Oh, it didn't say be bothered. It said be bothered.
How far should I say roused from his noetic emptiness by moonlight?
Oh, because one should not get stuck in noetic emptiness. That the point, one of the major points is, we should not get stuck in noetic emptiness. We have to, because we're of our human situation, if we get stuck in noetic emptiness, that's like being, it's called getting stuck in emptiness.
So we rely upon the celestial bodies to rouse us out of this state?
Well, the celestial bodies are on your own mind. The celestial bodies are your own mind. You have to remember this. This is metaphor. It's not.
I see.
Or metaphors.
Metaphors. Yes. So this is one side. There are five of these positions.
Okay.
So don't get stuck in the first position.
Okay.
This is exactly what Hockman is talking about all the time. Don't get stuck in any position.
Okay.
So, but this is if we see this. You can see the five positions as a progression, or you can see it as each one viewing reality from five different places. That's the way I like to see it. Although Hockman talks about it as a progression. And the reason why, when we went to page 77, let's go back to page 77, it's a little complex, but it's good. You see, down the middle, there are these 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. See those?
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the various ways that one can look at these five positions.
Mm.
So, from your question, the first and second are polarity. The reason they're polarity is because they're complementary, I would say. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. That's what the two first positions are representing. So you can see it as one and two are polarity, are static, actually, kind of static. And three, four, and five are progression. In other words, these are the activities which come out of the two, of one and two. The three activities. And then, 1, 2, a polarity, 3 is a pivot, and 4 and 5 is a polarity, or a complementary. And then you can see it as 1 and 2 are a polarity, 2 and 3 and 4 are a polarity, and 5 is all-inclusive, totalistic. Or you can see it as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 progression. Or you can see it as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 no progression or polarity. And Bill and others mentioned this. So, I like it as a progression, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But I like it best as 1, 2 polarity. 3 is pivot, and 4 and 5 is not polarity, but complementary. Because this is the Vajra. Do you remember the Vajra? And the Vajra is 3, number 3. I mean, that's the handle, the middle. And to me, it's like a mandala. I like to see it as a mandala. If it's a progression, like it's laid out here on top, that's a good way to explain it. But I like to see it as the third position. The four positions revolving around the middle. But anyway, that's just so I'm going to start again to read a little bit read his commentary. And yet they still harbor fingers. The pitch dark period of the dead of night is a lucid symbol of undifferentiated consciousness. Undifferentiated consciousness means no differentiation. That's the dark. This stage, mostly dark. This stage corresponds to a standpoint of noetic emptiness, the highest state of samadhi. The enlightened mind has reached the peak of total creation, cessation of sensorial and intellective functions. So in other words, you stop thinking mind, I mean, more or less. But this stage of pureness is neither final nor exclusive. It just contains the seeds of past experiences. I don't know where you got that. In the subliminal levels of consciousness, when the moon starts shining, the process of discrimination will be ready to reappear, and that leads to the second circle, which is there is equality in the midst of diversity. So this is emptiness is form. Emptiness, so to speak, is hidden within form. The first is form is hidden within emptiness. This is emptiness is hidden within form. So, although you know all this is form, emptiness is there as its fundamental. The old woman who missed the dawn of a new day stands in front of her old mirror now. She sees her face with perfect clarity, and there is no further reality beyond this. Stop turning your head again this way and that and giving credence to those reflections. There's a lot to say about that. That's one of the many different commentaries on that. They're very poetic. So he says, contrary to the foregoing state, which was the first one, we find ourselves in the middle of the day with its multiplicity of objects, cares, and concerns. This represents the state of discrimination at its height. The very essence of things, viewed as absolute emptiness, is the equality that it is inherently embedded in diversity. In the second stage, diversity is considered to be the proper platform on which to reestablish the absolute relativity of things. So this perspective delves into absoluteness from the formal medium of relativity. Under the immediate fact that this absoluteness intrinsically permeates each corner of relativity, it can be stated that there is equality in the midst of diversity. So this is like the horizontal and the vertical. You know, there is more complexity to these five ranks because when they're fully developed understanding, which Hartman does present, they're connected to the eight levels of consciousness, the four wisdoms, and the trikaya. But I'm not going to go into that now. First we should learn fundamentals and then talk about the trikaya, Buddha Dharma Sangha, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Manakaya, and the eight levels of consciousness, the five senses, the sixth sense consciousness, Manovijnana, Manas, and Alayavijnana, and how they correspond to each other and to the five ranks. That's what makes the five ranks interesting. It kind of brings up the nature of how the five ranks actually is an expression of consciousness, the various levels of consciousness, and how consciousness is expressed as wisdom when it's transformed, and how the three Dharmakaya, Nirmanakaya, and Sambhogakaya relate to all this. It's kind of complex, but it's a wonderful logic. When you understand it. So I'm going to go to the third Is there any question about the second one, Charlie?
Well, could you just, in your own words, describe the woman and looking in the mirror?
Yeah, it's it's tricky. It's like she wakes up and she looks in the mirror. There are really stories of it. And every day she wakes up and looks in the mirror and sees herself. But one day she looked in the mirror and she didn't see herself. And so she was looking around looking for her head. And the reason that she didn't see herself was because when she usually looks in the mirror, she sees something that she thinks is herself. But one day she woke up, right? So, and she looked in the mirror and she didn't see that familiar thing that she called herself.
So, but this is it. If in this circle, the relative is dominant.
That's right.
So why is this relative being dominant all of a sudden getting her to wake up?
Because she woke up to the fact that what she thought was simply phenomenon was actually, she saw something hidden within, she saw the absolute within the relative.
Okay.
But taking it more literally, it seems...
Yeah, don't do that.
what it says is that it's not talking about her waking up. That may be a background story,
yeah.
But it's talking about she's looking at a reflection,
mm-hmm.
and sort of the gist of it would seem like in this case we're not worrying about the absolute. We're looking about these particulars, you know, a nose or a wrinkle or. The color of her hair or something, and it seems to be saying like in this number two we're looking, this is it, these wrinkles and this nose and this thing, that's it, don't even turn around, not even thinking about the absolute, we're just looking at these particular things that
because the absolute is hidden within the relative. What you see as the relative is actually the absolute. It's the relative is just the relative, that's right. But the relative, that absolute, is when you see the relative, you see the absolute.
You don't see the absolute.
You don't, but.
So you see the relative, but you don't see the absolute.
You don't see it as the absolute.
You can't see the absolute.
Well, the only way you can see the absolute is through the relative.
You say what?
The only way you can see the absolute is through the relative.
Right.
The only way you can see emptiness, if you try to find emptiness,
you can't see.
You won't find it. The only way that you can find it is through the relative, through form.
This is
the realm of form.
We think that we can see the relative. When I'm looking at something, I'm saying, "Oh, I'm seeing this."
What you see is you see the relative. Yeah. You know, but what you see is the absolute, expressed as the relative.
Okay. I'm just trying to always reverse it. So
okay.
It goes both directions.
Yeah. But you know, this is just this, right?
Yeah.
So the problem that we have is that we fall into absolutes. Even the absolute, absolute. We just call it the absolute. It's not a very good word, you know. It's the essence and function. That's better. Essence and function. Essence is what we term as the absolute, yeah. Right? But the, without its function, is the relative. It functions as things. Let's look at the chart. Remember the chart? Now here's Bill Powell's verse, his translation. Okay, 78?
Yeah.
Don't change five positions?
Yeah.
Okay, at the beginning of the, here's the first one, his translation. At the beginning of the night's third watch, midnight, before there is moonlight, don't be surprised to meet, yet not recognize, what is surely a familiar face from the past. And then the second one, an old crony, I like to say, we used to say crony, but people say crone. What is it?
Crony.
No, crony. An old crony. Have
you're talking about two different things. Crony is male, crone is female.
Does that sound?
Yes.
An old crone is like a very old woman.
An old crone.
A male crone is like a male crone.
The old crone.
An accomplice.
Crony is gateway.
Crony is a
wide crone. An old crone. Having just awakened, comes upon an ancient mirror, that which is clearly reflected in front of her face is none other than her own likeness. Don't lose sight of your own face and go chasing after your shadow. Okay, let's look at Cleary's translation. A woman who has overslept encounters an ancient mirror. Clearly she sees her face. There is no other reality. Nevertheless, she still mistakes the reflection for her head.
This is not a pipe.
This is not a what?
A pipe. You know, this is
Tene Palaki.
This is Marguerite.
Not a what?
This is not a pipe. It's a famous painting, you know.
The surrealist art history.
So, in other words, this is not a reflection.
Well, it's not.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah. Well, don't lose sight of your baby angel. Okay. A woman who's overslept encounters an ancient mirror. Clearly, she sees her face. There is no other reality. Nevertheless, she still mistakes the reflection. Okay? So, reflection here would be the relative. Because we say the relative is a reflection of the absolute.
Yes.
So she doesn't quite see herself completely. But, let's look at Clary. At dawn, an old woman encounters an ancient mirror. Clearly, she sees her face. There is no other reality. Don't go on mistaking the image for the head. And Locke, Charles Locke says, at dawn, an ignorant old woman finds an ancient mirror wherein she clearly sees a face which cannot be elsewhere. No more will she reject her head by grasping at its shadow. The old woman symbolizes antiquated prejudices.
That's misogynistic.
Well, that's the story.
That's his story.
And we should say something to Dongshan.
He got it from Dongshan?
What do you mean? This is Dongshan.
He got the story from Dongshan?
Dharamsala got the story from an old Chinese story. This is an old Chinese story that he's using to illustrate this particular position. So here's Wu's, John Wu, who's a Chinese historian. The dawn has come to the surprise of an old woman, and she chances upon an antique mirror in which she sees clearly and distinctly her own face, so different from all the images she had formed of herself. From now on, she will no longer ignore her own head and grasp at its mere shadow. I like that one.
Yeah. But it's really different, especially in the ending, from Cleary's first one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, I mean, they're looking at the same Chinese character they're coming up with.
That's right. Except that Wu is Chinese. But that doesn't necessarily mean his translation better. Actually, Cleary's might be better. But I like that one because it's so clear. So anyway, those are. I think that do we get it?
Yeah. We get the fact that the absolute is manifest in the reality.
Well, the antique mirror is like. Suddenly waking up to what the reality of not being fooled by the what she sees, and which is called the seeming, translated as the seeming. The relative is often translated as the seeming. So in this case, what she's not fooled by what seems to be what she always thought of as who she was. So she's seeing this from the side of differentiation. She's waking up to the realization of what differentiation really is. Not fooled by what seems to be. And in the light of day. So that's just the other side, right? So we don't have time, do we? Anyway, I hope, one of the problems we have is doing this once a month.
Yeah.
The continuity gets kind of lost, and you have to start over again, and we're going to have to exceed. Is that okay?
Well, where are we going to go into June?
Well, what we're going to go into is the next three.
Yeah.
Just compare all these translations on the page. And I would say to read Hakuin's commentary.
Is that
in here?
Is it here?
Yeah.
Fine.
Hakuin's commentary is the whole thing.
And Alexandra will probably scan that and have it be available by email sometime next month as well. Also, do you want to mention about your schedule for April?
Okay. Theoretically, my plan was to go to India in the middle of the month, next month, for the rest of the month. In which case, we might schedule this for a different Thursday, but I don't know if that works. But if I don't go, we'll just have a class.
Yeah. if you do go, we could do it on the first or second Thursday in May, because mid-May starts the practice period.
Mm-hmm.
So our third week of May. So, but we can email you what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think that the good thing, the thing is to make each class be its own. Have a kind of complete thing, so that we don't have to have too much, you know, stop in the middle or too much continuity, but we lose the continuity. So that, it's hard to keep it up. But if we know exactly what we're going to study, I wanted to get to Hakuin, but I wanted to get some basic stuff before we get to Hakuin.
You know, there's some advantage in stretching it out, though.
If
we're doing stuff in between, you know, like maybe just exploring loneliness.
As long as we can keep up the interest, it's fine. But, you know, sometimes the interest lags, and as you can see.
Well, a number of people said they couldn't make it tonight.
Okay.
Let me know if they had to be out of town or this or that. So it's not that they didn't care, they just couldn't make it.
Great. Thank you.